Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge, who had the pleasure of meeting the man, the myth, the legend, the guy who has taken CFL media by storm in 2025. Yes, Luke Wilson. Hodge, you had a private, shall we say, sit down with Mr. Wilson and Dwayne Ford, the much revered CFL color commentator.
Yes, the CFL draft guru, Dwayne Ford. It was a great lunch. I mean, first of all, Luke paid, so I'm his best friend for life now. If you buy me lunch, I will be your best friend. That's my price, is one lunch. Some people have suggested the price should be higher. I think people suggest that. Maybe don't love lunch as much as I do, okay? I love lunch. I love me some lunch. That said, it was a great chat. We hung out for 3 hours in Winnipeg on that Friday ahead of the Bombers Argos game that night, and I thought it was a great conversation. I won't spoil what it was because this wouldn't be my place to share, but Luke shared his vision for what the CFL roster rules should be, because I think everybody agrees that they're currently too convoluted with globals and designated Americans and designated Hoosier-Hazards and just like, oh my god, what is going on with these crazy insane depth charts and designations. And I think he thought it was going to be a hot take, be controversial. And I said, well, actually, I met Stuart Johnston in Winnipeg early on in the season. I think it was week two or week three. And he asked me to pen a letter with some recommendations, some changes. And my change for the roster rules was essentially the exact same. Not exactly the same, but very, very close to what Luke Wilson's idea is. So I'm interested to see where that goes. I would be happy to pen a column about it. But again, I don't want to let the cat out of the bag on the pod, because feel like that would be unfair to Luke if and when he wants to reveal his own idea for the CFL's roster composition.
Can you describe how the photo came to be? Because we all know there's the Instagram version and then the real life version. For those that didn't see it, John Hodge and Luke Wilson looking like tough guys shaking hands in Winnipeg.
So the chatter was, so Dwayne was seated and Luke said, well, we got to take a pick. I'll tag your boy JC and we'll talk smack about JC. And I think the origin of the beef with JC is that there's a guy out of Luke's alma mater of Rice who I don't think was thrilled with coverage that JC gave him early in his career. And this guy and Luke are still tight. So I think that's where that beef comes from, though. I think it's one-sided. I don't think JC has any beef with Luke Wilson or this other individual who's from Rice, who may or may not be in Ottawa now after starting his career at BC. regardless, it was a friendly thing, and it was, let's take a photo where we're like mean mugging each other, and then we'll take a smiling picture. So I didn't know if he was going to take the mean mugging or use the mean mugging picture or use the smiling picture. I don't particularly care. I did invoice him for my photo fee. He has not paid that yet, but he did pay for lunch. So I did give him the specialty photo rate, because as we all know, I'm in such demand. I don't shoot photos for free.
You only do it with people who have chirped you online for years. With a smile on your face. I don't know how you do that, bro.
True. Yeah, I'm just kidding. I'll take a picture with pretty much anybody. That's fine. The only thing that I always ask people to do when they want a picture is tag me so that I can send it to my mom, because she gets so jacked when people are like, "Oh, people wanted a photo with you. That's great." Like that's the stamp of approval right there. She loves that people are jacked to get a picture with me. So no, I'll take a picture with anybody. I'm just joking about the invoice. But yeah, it was a great lunch. It was a great chat and some great stories. And yeah, I mean, I've always respected what Luke does, obviously, on the field, tremendously long NFL career, winning a Super Bowl. You got to respect that. And I like a lot of his ideas off the field. The way in which he goes about communicating those ideas is a little rougher around the edges than I would do it, but that's a difference of opinion. And I don't think he's doing anything untoward by going about his business the way he goes about it. And he's perfectly entitled to go about his business the way he wants to go about it. Because if we all went about our business the same exact way, life would be pretty boring. So no, it was a great lunch. It was a great conversation. And I do think that Luke has his heart in the right place when it comes to his CFL coverage. That's for sure.
Luke Wilson just loves ball, okay?
And he does.
He's focused that love on the Canadian Football League. And if there's more people talking passionately about the league and they happen to have the following that Luke Wilson does, it can only be beneficial for the CFL.
Got to get those Kit Kats. Got to get those Kit Kats.
Get them. Today, we're discussing some less than stellar performances from backup CFL quarterbacks.
Saskatchewan being favorites to win the 2025 Grey Cup.
Breakout rookie returner Trey Vavil.
Sean Lemon taking responsibility for his gambling suspension.
And the Atlanta Falcons releasing former CFL standout Mekhi Polk. But first,
Bo Levi Mitchell passed Doug Flutie for ninth on the CFL's all-time passing yardage list. How high can Mitchell go by the end of his illustrious CFL career?
There's going to be a lot of projections with this answer, but the easy one is that this season, he's going to pass Matt Dunnigan for eighth. He is now a little over 2,000 yards away from doing so. And with the clip that he's been on at the end of last season and to date through 2025, that one to me is going to be easy. Then you look at 7, 6, and 5 on the list. If he passes Matt Dunnigan, which I think he can do again and gets to, let's say, 44,000 yards and change this season to get to Ron Lancaster at 7th. Lancaster has 50,535 yards. Now, I'm no mathematician, but that would take a huge season, an all-time CFL record season in 2026 for Bo Levi Mitchell. I believe there's only, what, 3 quarterbacks in CFL history to throw for 6,000 yards in a season. Is that right, Hodge?
That sounds right. I think Calvillo did it once, and I think Doug Flutie did it at least twice. I think so.
I think Doug Flutie did it twice. I believe Austin did it once.
Kent Austin did it, I think.
I don't think Calvillo was the other one. The other one was a quarterback on one of the American teams. You can look it up. I'm trying to think about it here because I actually got the name a few weeks ago when my producer out west for the Riders home games, when we do the live stream, Dave Roberts quizzed me. So that's why I was bringing it up here. But nonetheless, if Bo Levi Mitchell is going to get to 7 or higher on this list, then it means that he's going to have to play past 2025. And Bo Levi Mitchell told 3 Down Nation in an exclusive conversation leading into the 2025 season that he can envision himself winning a Grey Cup and walking off into the sunset. Now, I think if you ask Bo Levi Mitchell at this current moment in time, if he would still walk away playing at this high of a level, that would be hard for him to envision. He can probably envision winning a Grey Cup in 2025 with the Ticats, but walking away while he's putting together potentially back-to-back 5,000-yard seasons would leave so many questions out there in terms of, you know, how much more could we get from Bo Levi Mitchell in this tandem that has turned out to be awesome with him and Scott Milanovic in that offense. And then you add in what he's done with Kenny Lawler. So in terms of how far he climbs up the list, it depends how many more seasons he plays. I could see him getting up into 5th and passing Danny McManus, but that requires Bo Levi Mitchell to play at least 2 more seasons past 2025 to do so.
Yeah, I mean, Mitchell's, I think, barring injury, knock on wood, going to get to Matt Dunnigan this season. That is just over 2,000 yards. And right now that clip for Bo, who's got 10 games left. Obviously, we'll have to wait and see with, you know, if the Ticats wrap up first place in the East Division early, which right now it looks like they very well could, given obviously the slow starts in Toronto and Ottawa, given how the Montreal Alouettes have looked like, I was going to say a bad word in French. I won't use that word. They've looked poor as of late. I think that's fair to say. The Ticats could be wrapping this thing up early, and obviously I'm sure they would be very happy to give Bo a rest late in the season. Regardless, though, the yardage isn't even the biggest thing for me. Like, kudos to Bo for getting to number 9 overall. That's great. But to me, the thing that has blown my mind this year is 18 touchdown passes to 3 interceptions. And one of those interceptions was quite literally the greatest interception in the history of the CFL from Robert Carter Jr. last year. A ball that never should have gotten picked off. You just, at that point, you tip your cap to the defensive back for making an unbelievable play. Like, his touchdown interception ratio right now is 6-1. It could be 9-1. Like, just an unbelievable performance from Bo. Like, the CFL is a league where if you play enough games, especially if you're in a high percentage enough offense, you're going to rack up some yardage, right? We've seen, I don't want to say bad quarterbacks, but we've seen some average to mediocre quarterbacks put up 4,000 yard seasons, because if you get that playing time, right, just given the style of certain offenses, you're going to get there. So the
Jonathan
yardage,
Jennings,
I'm not saying
had a 5,000 yard season.
Well, Jonathan Jennings was not in a high pass or high percentage or completion percentage offense. He was in a, I'm going to bomb it to legendary receivers. And he was a beast with that until his shoulder got ruined. And then he was just not himself anymore due to injury. But regardless, the thing that I have immense respect for Bo this season, and the reason that I agree with some other pundits who have suggested he's playing the best football of his career, is because he seems to be taking more shots than he ever has before. But he is not putting the ball into harm's way. Like, those shots are working out. And that is why the Ticats are the most exciting team to watch in the CFL right now. Like, they are the must-watch, can't-miss team for me in 2025, which I got to give them credit for, because they were not that in 2024. Last year, this team was, you know, okay, Bo's showing some signs, but he also got benched at one point. Okay, Shamar Bridges is rising. Tim White dropping too many passes. The O-line, you know, the O-line's getting better. It's improving. You know, defensively, they're a little bit of a mess at times. This season, that team is dialed in. And obviously, Kenny Lawler's been great. Tim White's having a bit of a bounce back year. There's lots of things to give him credit for. Brent Monson coming in, I think, is doing a nice job with that defense. Isaiah Wooden's been a breakout guy on the return game. But the number one reason they're having success, in my mind, is Bo. 18 touchdowns to 3 picks. It's been a long time since we saw numbers like that near the midway point of a CFL season. Good for Bo. Playing the best ball of your career at 35 is not an easy thing to do.
Let's not forget, you alluded to it there, but Bo Levi Mitchell was benched last year by Scott Milanovic, and Scott Milanovic continued to be hard on him for putting the football in harm's way or actually having the balls intercepted. Like, he talked about it during training camp. We wrote an article about it for 3downnation.com, and people were like, why are you writing about Bo Levi Mitchell throwing interceptions in training camp? It's like, well, that's why he got benched last year. And yeah, this is something that Scott Milanovic is serious about. Like, he's not joking around about it. So credit to Scott Milanovic for being able to be a major part of this renaissance for Bo Levi Mitchell. Let's go back to the 6,000-yard passing season, because I want to get this right. Hodge, you were actually correct. Anthony Calvillo had one of them. So there are four quarterbacks, if I'm counting right, in CFL history that have had 6,000-yard passing seasons. Doug Flutie had two. He threw for 6,619 yards in 1991. That is the CFL single-season record. Unbelievable.
Insane.
And Kent Austin is two. Doug Flutie did it again in 1993. Anthony Calvillo in 2004 threw for over 6,000 yards. Can you get the other quarterback, Hodge? 1993 it happened, and it was for one of the American expansion teams. The season was kind of an anomaly.
There were a lot of great quarterbacks who went down to the States because they wanted to be in the States. That's where they were from, right? Tracy Ham was down there, but he ran the ball too much to be the 6,000-yard guy. My guess would be with the Birmingham Barracudas. Is it Damon Allen or Matt Dunnigan?
Nope.
Damn. Okay. Who is it? Who is it?
Let me just make sure I get the team right here, because it was the Sacramento Gold Miners was the team in 1993. And the quarterback was, you want me to give it to you?
Sure. Yeah.
David Archer.
Wow. Okay. I know of, he played in Sasky, I think, after that. I know the name, but admittedly, no. When I think great CFL quarterbacks, no disrespect, David Archer is not one of the top names that comes to mind.
Had one of the greatest seasons as a passer in CFL history. So four quarterbacks ever in the history of the CFL have thrown for over 6,000 yards. That's why I believe if Bo Levi Mitchell is going to get above Ronnie Lancaster and then up into sixth or fifth, Kevin Glenn is sixth, Danny McManus is fifth, that he's going to have to play multiple seasons after the 2025 season. But nonetheless, Hodge, you hit it on the head. It's been highly entertaining to watch this offense come together. Last year, Bo Levi Mitchell threw for 5,000 yards, but it felt different. This is a dominant projection towards 5,000 yards or clip or whatever you want to call it that he's on. And let's not forget Keandre Smith, who's having a great season, another high-end year for this Canadian receiver. Yes, he went to my alma mater, the University of Guelph, but the son of Adrian Pee-wee Smith is having another stellar year in this offense. And Bo Levi Mitchell, the way that he's been distributing the football, as you alluded to, taking shots down the field with precision, has been highly, highly exciting to watch. Kenny Lawler doing his thing. Teams are starting to double him a little bit more. So we'll see how Scott Milanovich schemes to get Lawler open. Or perhaps they're just going to continue taking the one-on-one coverage elsewhere because of all the attention that Lawler has attracted. But I said a couple weeks ago on the pod that I would lean towards Kenny Lawler if I had an MLP vote at that time. At this time, and you know there's still a bunch of season to go, I think it has to be Bo Levi Mitchell.
I would agree. Yes, Bo would be my vote right now. There's still plenty of season to happen. But yeah, right now, Bo, I think, is the very clear-cut MOP. And this is also why, and I'll mention this because I mention this any opportunity I get, this is why we need to change the antiquated CFL awards rules, because the final vote should be able to be Kenny Lawler versus Bo. Like, the fact that they're on the same team should not preclude one of them from being the division, or both of them from being finalists, much less, you know, on the final ballot and all that. Like, right now, with the way one guy from one team gets to go to the division level than the league level is silly. It harkens back to a time when the only people who could possibly be trusted to have an opinion on a team were the local media members, because it was impossible to watch these games on television. Well, it's not the 1960s anymore. We're all watching all the games, or at least anybody who has a vote should be watching all the games. It's not that hard. Like, these guys should both be MOP finalists if the season were to end today. As an aside, David Archer did not play in Sasky. I misremembered. He played two seasons in Sacramento, one for the San Antonio Texans, one for the Ottawa Rough Riders, and then one in Edmonton. I didn't realize that he spent nine seasons in the NFL before, or at least American football, a little bit in the, I guess that would have been the USFL, I think. Was that the Sacramento Surge, 1992? No, sorry, World League of American Football. Oh, my God, we're in the weeds. Let's dial it back in. David Archer, shout out, 20,000 yards in the CFL. That's legit.
Week 9 in the CFL saw four backup quarterbacks start for their respective teams: PJ Walker, Chris Streveler, McLeod Bethel-Thompson, and Nick Arbuckle. If you don't count Arbuckle, who's been Toronto's quarterback season to date with Chad Kelly still out with that broken leg, the three other quarterbacks combined for a minuscule 572 passing yards, one touchdown through the air, and seven barf interceptions. Hodge, does the CFL have a backup quarterback problem?
Well, I mean, just as recently as last week, I kind of railed against the thought that after 1 week of games, we should all be taking stock about league crises, right? Like, I don't think one bad week of four games means that the league is in crisis, or means that we could start talking about overarching huge year-to-year trends. That said, I mean, quarterback play has been a topic of conversations topic of conversation for multiple seasons in the Canadian Football League right now. I don't think you can judge PJ Walker too harshly because it was start number one. That said, this is not a 24-year-old who's only a year or two removed from the collegiate ranks. This is a 30, 31-year-old man who has started like close to a dozen NFL games and has been a pro for close to a decade. And I thought he went out in that game and he did, unfortunately, exactly what I thought he would do. He threw every ball 100 miles an hour. Obviously, Calgary's receiving core needs to be better, but that unit is also extremely banged up right now. There was no Reggie Bagleton, no Jalen Philpott, no Clark Barnes, no Damian Alford. Like when you're out four starting caliber receivers, that puts you in a huge bind. And I didn't like the game plan from Calgary necessarily. I thought they put too much on PJ Walker. And I didn't like PJ Walker's execution. That being said, I think if you look at the two other teams in this situation, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, the Montreal Alouettes, at least these two teams have somebody who you can kind of pull the chute and go to. Like Chris Streveler did not have the goods on Friday night. Were it not for a defensive touchdown and two special teams touchdowns, the Bombers lose that game. And I don't think they lose it by a tight margin. I think it is a 10 to 20 point win for the Toronto Argonauts. At least in Winnipeg, you've got Terry Wilson there. Not a guy with like extremely high collegiate accolades, but at least he's in year two in your system. He has some mobility, right? He's got a bigger arm, I think, than Chris Streveler does. I'm interested to see if Terry Wilson gets any looks. And then in Montreal, Jason Moss went to Caleb Evans for like a drive. And it was like, okay, this makes sense because Caleb Evans is a vet. He's more mobile than McLeod Bethel-Thompson. He looked really good in the preseason. I know preseason is preseason, but there's still worthwhile games to some extent at least. And then you've also got James Morgan, a guy who everybody, including our guy Pablo Herrera-Vargara, were absolutely buzzing about all through training camp as a guy who's a former NFLer where it's like, wow, the strides he has made over this past offseason, like through his young CFL career, are wild. So at this point, obviously we want backup quarterbacks to play better. And yeah, I don't really consider Nick Arbuckle a backup at this point because he's been the only guy in Toronto all year. And who even knows at this rate if Chad Kelly is going to play? I don't know if the Toronto Argonauts have been completely honest in their assessment of Chad and his likelihood to play so far this year. I'm very doubtful about that. But some of these backups, I think, need to have shorter leashes. I think that's my bigger point, right? It didn't work last year, but I love the decision for the Calgary Stampeders to throw in Logan Bonner for a game and say, you know what? This kid's been with us for 3 years. It's time to see if he can sink or swim. And they threw him in the deep end and he sunk. But at least then they knew, okay, this kid's not it. We need to go find somebody else. And you learned something, right? I think some of these guys are kept on the bench too long, especially because I think it's a lot easier to come into a game when your team is down a score or two and it's the third quarter and the defense hasn't prepped against you and the game is already in flow and you've had a chance to see and watch the tablet, watch the field, know what the other team's doing, rather than, okay, kid, you're starting this week. The other team's going to know it because you're going to get all the first team reps. And now you've got a defensive coordinator and his position coach is digging into every single thing you ever did in college, all of your tendencies, all of those things. And of course, the fans are going to be all over y'all going, wow, we got a new starter this week. Let's blah, 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 right? Sometimes getting in a relief effort takes that pressure off. So I think some of these CFL teams need to have shorter leashes because there's a reason backups are backups. It's because they're not consistent enough. If a guy doesn't have the goods one game, pull the chute, try again next week. Right? I don't think it's that complicated. Pull the chute. Your leash is too long for your backup.
I don't think the CFL has a backup quarterback problem. One of the issues, though, is that the starter gets the majority of the reps, like 95, maybe even 99% of the reps during the week, especially with the ones. So you have these other quarterbacks on the roster who are trying to develop without actually getting reps. You can talk about taking mental reps all you want, and I get it. You'll want to stay locked in. But it's just not the same. You know, I look at the Saskatchewan Roughriders, for example. When they had to go to Jake Mayer for a game, they didn't put it all on his shoulders. That's where I think the Riders did really well that game. When they said, okay, ideally we make some plays in the return game with Mario Alford at the time who was healthy, run the rock with AJ Ouellette and the other running backs in the stable, and not have Mayer have to make a bunch of throws. I'm not saying that you can always do that, and it's difficult especially when the other team knows who's going to start at quarterback. But to be quite honest, McLeod Bethel-Thompson has to play better. He's the highest paid backup in the league, a guy that has led the Toronto Argonauts to a Grey Cup fairly recently in 2022. He did just not play very well because Montreal should be able to have their defense play well enough, run the ball decently well with Travis Tice or Sean Thomas Erlington back there, and have McLeod Bethel-Thompson meticulously move the football down the field. But then look at the opposition. The Alouettes had a bunch of changes on their defense. KB Nento was a game-time decision. He did not play. That forced some shuffling there. A bunch of other, I think, different roster iterations did not necessarily help Montreal with the injuries that they've had, Austin Mack, Tyson Philpott in particular. So you take those guys out and away from McLeod Bethel-Thompson, he looks much different. So I think we need to look at each situation very differently when we're talking about backup quarterbacks. And it goes back to this talk that we've had a little bit on the podcast of having the mini camps come back, or a way to get the non-starters more high-quality reps, because I think that's what's going to help. But then at the end of the day, Hodge, it sounds cruel in a way, but some guys either rise to the bright lights when they get their opportunity. We saw it with Davis Alexander last year, or some guys like Logan Bonner just absolutely drown when they get thrown into the deep end. Now, I think it's difficult to make a full, complete assessment on Logan Bonner's future after one football game. But in the pros, some guys don't even get that opportunity as a quarterback, let alone some of the other positions. So you need to be ready to go. And the truth then becomes, at least from my standpoint, is you talk about all this preparation you want, okay? But in the moment, you have to produce. And that's pro football, that's professional sports at its best. It might sound cutthroat, but you have to produce, and it doesn't matter when you get that opportunity. Davis Alexander is the best example of it recently in the Canadian Football League. You know, we've talked about Logan Bonner, we're kind of banging on him, but he's one of the worst ones recently. And you ultimately carry that label around with you. And Davis Alexander still hasn't been beaten as a starting quarterback. I think he should have got that win last year when he led the Alouettes back. That win actually went to Caleb Evans.
No, it's Caleb Evans.
Cody Fajardo, but no, he didn't play in that game because he was hurt. So I think that's part of the issue here, is how can we get these guys more high-quality reps? But at the same time, the quarterbacks just have to be ready to play. Like, it's not the same level, but I'll just give you my own experience. When I was at the University of Guelph, was literally any rep that I get in practice, you know, not even just especially in front of the head coach, but any rep that I know is going to be on film was a little different back in those days. Like, it wasn't like we were being filmed every second that we were out on the field. But I knew that I had veterans in front of me. And even though I didn't think that they were very good, I still had to prove over and over again to the coaches that I was better than them. And that I was better than the recruits that came in that were more highly thought of than me. So that was my sole focus. And then when I got the opportunity to start and play in a football game, even though I was pretty much pooping down my leg because Ricky Foley was starting on the other side, it's like, do you want to be the starter? Well, this is what you have worked and focused on, so you better be ready to run RPO against Ricky Foley. Otherwise, you're not going to be on the field. That's just at the university level. The pro level is even more so difficult in terms of getting that opportunity. So that's where my focus always was. And then I knew that when I got my opportunity, I had to get the offense moving in some form or fashion. That's the same thing in the CFL. So I don't necessarily think it's a talent evaluation issue or a coaching issue. It's just that some of these guys got to step up and play better. Or like you said, Hodge, move on to the next one. We know, for example, what Dustin Crum is right now. That's one of the major questions, you know, I would have for Ottawa. Drew Brown's back and healthy, but how have we not seen Tyree Adams? You know, to your point of like cutting bait, moving on to the next guy. That is a real head scratcher for me. But you look at these other situations, the Stamps go with PJ Walker, who hadn't started a football game before. Chris Streveler, we know what he is. The Bombers did some other things around him. Obviously, Trey Vavil was dynamite. We'll talk about him in a little bit. Willie Jefferson and the defense did their thing, scoring a touchdown. And I think they play to Strebler's strengths. That's the other part of this that I think needs to be mentioned, is that when these backup quarterbacks get in the game or are starting a football game, I think we need to challenge the offensive coordinators and see more of them tailoring the game around their strengths and not just trying to run the offense as it was for the starting quarterback. I don't necessarily think that that's the case across the board. I'm just saying in some situations, you can see that it's not really tailored to that quarterback. And that's not giving the players the best chance at success, particularly the quarterbacks.
Yeah, and I will correct one thing you said. I think you said P.J. Walker never started a game. Maybe I misheard you. Obviously, he started in the NFL. This was his first CFL start, though. And that is significant because the leagues are different. The offenses are different. To me, and this was one of the things we chatted about at lunch, and this is something that Luke has said publicly, so I don't feel bad sharing this, is he just wants to see teams literally putting in more time, right? Like 3-4 hour practices or 3 hour prep days, whatever you want to call it. Like these guys are on the field for a couple hours. They're off the field for a couple hours. Should be noted, obviously, that a lot of players are in the building at 6 a.m. and they don't leave till 6 p.m. and they're putting in all kinds of extra time preparation and those things. But I mean, is it possible that if practice wasn't 2 hours, but it was 3 hours, and maybe there was, and obviously I know the PA would fight against that. They don't want to be on the field any extra time than they necessarily have to be, at least not with extra compensation. But maybe if the structure was, okay, you can use this extra period exclusively on your number twos or exclusively on backup quarterbacks or exclusively on PR guys, right? Giving opportunities for players in those positions to get more reps, I think would be beneficial. Obviously, some players don't need to be mandated extra work. They're the ones after practice who are just doing the extra work despite not getting extra payment because it's a competitive work environment and they want to get it. But I do think that increasing meeting time, like obviously Dave Dickinson knows way more about football than I do. He's probably forgotten more than I know about football. But when you look at the game plan for PJ Walker, basically to me, it looked like, yeah, this is what we usually do with VA. And this is more or less what we're going to have you do. And as a first-time CFL starter, which is a lot to ask, I would have loved for Calgary to have gone and said, okay, we're starting a first-time starter. Yeah, he's not a spring chicken. Yeah, he's not never played in the NFL, but he's still a first-time CFL starter. We're going to go double tight. We're going to dress 7-0 linemen. We're going to run misdirection that opposing teams don't usually see. We're going to run some option stuff that opposing defenses don't normally see because our number one priority this week is to take pressure off of PJ, right? VA is at a point in his career where you can put the entire offense on his shoulders and he's proven that he can carry that and he can run with it, right? He can lead a team through that. He could be that guy. But when you're down so many receivers and you're starting a first-time QB, like you almost need to install a brand new offense for that one game and make use of not just obviously Dedrick Mills, who's had a great year, but Joshua Dantwee and even Ludovic Chaquette, who I think has been nice for them in spot duty as a third running back, a nice pick out of Long Island in this year's draft. So to me, I would have liked to see more creativity, a more tailored offense for that game. I appreciate that that's challenging, especially sometimes when you only have a 6-day week. But if there was more meeting time in the CFL, if you had more time to go through film and install things, that might be a good opportunity to see improved quarterback play, right? If teams had more time to tailor specific game plans and install specific things for specific weeks, whether it's against specific opponents, I'm not saying teams don't already do at least some of that. Obviously, your game plan from week to week is always changing. But if there was more time to overhaul for a specific game, because putting all that pressure on PJ Walker with a not elite receiving core around him was too much to ask. And that showed when he struggled in that game. Yeah, he put up almost 300 yards, but he didn't put that team into a position to win. 11 points. Like you're not winning CFL games with 11 points unless your defense goes out and has a ridiculous performance and you get some type of special team touchdown. And obviously that didn't happen. They got their butts kicked in Ottawa.
There's only so much time that is mandated, as you mentioned, in the collective bargaining agreement for players to be in the facility per day. They can choose to be in there longer. But when Luke Wilson shared with me on a podcast that we did on the 3-Down Pod in January, you can go back and listen to it. I think he broke down what his day was like with the Seattle Seahawks. And if I remember, along the lines of it. I think he got in there early, perhaps had a positional meeting or did a workout in some order. So I'll just say it how I remember. It was like, get in there early, get your workout done. You have a positional meeting. You go out on the field and you do sort of a walkthrough practice for either your install for that week or what you might be adding on top of the foundation of your offense. You would come back in, you know, watch some more film, prepare in a bigger group meeting, like the offensive meeting, go back out, have your real practice, come back in, watch that film, dissect your opponent. And there was even more to that day, like treatment, and I forget all the things that he was running through, but it made a lot of sense to me. So it's like, how can we be efficient with the time in the Canadian Football League? Now, we're not coaches or general managers or, you know, people overseeing this allotted time inside the facility. But the one thing that sticks out to me, Hodge, is the walkthrough day. Like, what are people really getting out of the walkthrough day? Some of them are so short and brief. I get that you're getting their guys off the feet, but to play the other side of it here, let's say, at the University of Guelph, what they have actually started to do on the day before the game, which happens to be Friday, is instead of a walkthrough day, they do a ramp-up day. And there's some sports science that is backing this now that shows that instead of taking a more relaxed approach, let's say, with just a walkthrough, that if you ramp up the athlete's body the day before, they are going to go to an off-the-charts level because you can't necessarily simulate a game unless it's an actual game, that there is some science-based facts that show that this is actually better for the athletes in a lot of ways. One of them is injury prevention. So then I think of like, okay, we still do these somewhat archaic walkthroughs all the time on the day before the game. Why do we even do those? Like, let's just not even do the walkthroughs and put more of that time into the prep during the week then. You know what I mean? Like, well, is there a way that this time can be used in a more efficient way that helps the high-end product? I'm not necessarily saying the product is lagging, but just to Luke's preparation point, I think he makes a valid point from an area of expertise that he has.
Yeah, and I think the CFL's product is good. And frankly, I wouldn't waste my time covering this league if I thought anything else. But could it be better? Yes. And I think that's the goal for everybody, is what can we do to make that product better? For the record, some teams don't even walk through when they go on the road. And having covered full Grey Cup week practices, I would officially request that those events be called walkthroughs. And the walkthrough of Grey Cup week be changed to stand around, because that is what I witnessed from oftentimes both teams. It was a little different in BC when it was an indoor facility, but like in Regina in 2022, it's bitterly cold. The wind is whipping. It's the last game of the year. Guys are banged up. They're bruised. They're hurt. The quote unquote practice that I witnessed was not very practicey, for lack of a better word. It was very much walkthroughy. And then the walkthroughs were, it was just a bunch of dudes standing around waiting to go back inside where they could warm up. That is my assessment of it. So yeah, depending, and even if the hours don't change, what if we just, change the way they were allotted through the week, right? Maybe that would improve the product. Backup quarterbacks obviously need prep. I know the Winnipeg Blue Bombers are one of very few teams where the number two gets reps every day. That, based on the assessment that Zach Kolaris has given, is very abnormal. Almost everywhere else he's been in the CFL, the number one gets all the reps. So there are some teams who are splitting reps, but Chris Streveler, who was great in week two against the BC Lions, I'm not suggesting Chris Streveler hasn't played good football this year. He's great in that first start. Obviously was not great, or anywhere close to great, against the Toronto Argonauts this past week, though he is 2-0 as a starter this year.
Valspar Ultra starts at just $29.98 a gallon. So we've got you covered when your daughter wants to paint her room again, after last year's masterpiece of a unicorn mural.
Dad, please!
Or when you realize that maybe you went too hard on the greige.
I miss color.
Or when you are sure you wanted a home gym, but your elliptical is currently hanging your laundry.
What about a home office?
Shop everything you need for your next phase with Valspar. Available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
Isn't that wild? He's perfect.
I mean, when a dude on your team is the first player ever to score a kick and punt return TD in the same game, it helps a lot.
I don't think he was the first one ever, but he's entering history. We'll talk about it later on the show.
I thought that was your stat. He was the first Blue Bombers player ever to do that.
Hold on. Let me bring this up because now we're chatting about it. So Janarian Grant did it with two punt returns in 2019. So yeah, I guess that is a stat. First Blue Bomber to score a punt return touchdown and a kick return touchdown in Winnipeg Blue Bombers history in the same game. Though, he's not the first player ever to do it. When you look at the list and
Bombers.
With the Bombers, when you look at my list that I have on my Twitter feed, there's lots of players who have done. No one's ever had three kick return touchdowns in a game. And by kick return, I mean punt return, kickoff, or missed field goal return. It's happened 21 times. Wildly enough, Henry Gizmo Williams did this three times just by himself. That is unbelievably insane, but he did it three times. A couple other guys did it multiple times. Bashir Levingston did it a couple of times, and Earl Winfield did it a couple of times. So it's happened 21 times total now with Vavil being added. Only one previous Bomber had done it. That was two punt returns. Previously, the only people to do it with a punt and a kickoff return, Winfield, Derek Crawford, Demetrius Smith, and Chris Rainey. Everyone else did it with either multiple punt returns or a kickoff and a missed field goal or a punt and a missed field goal. So yeah, obviously, Trey Vavil gets the game ball that week for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
What a game, bro.
What a game. The Saskatchewan Rough Riders improved to a CFL best 7-1 with a dominant 34-6 win in Montreal over the Alouettes. Odds makers have made the Riders the favorite to win the 2025 Grey Cup. Can Saskatchewan host the West Final for the first time since 2019 and keep up their current run to win a CFL championship in Winnipeg?
There's still a long way to go. I definitely think they are squarely in the driver's seat to host that West Final, being 4 points up on Calgary for the division lead, a decided advantage there. As for winning the Grey Cup, if this team continues to follow Corey Mace's motto that he's instilled, and it's cliche elsewhere, but I think it's real within the walls of Mosaic Stadium that he just wants his team to focus on going 1-0 every week, I think there's a very real chance that the Riders could be in that Grey Cup game in Winnipeg, which the Blue Bombers obviously do not want to see. But Hodge, the other part of this, to me at least, is that to dethrone the king, you have to kill the king. And the king of the West Division over the last 5 years has been the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. I don't care how good or not good the Bombers have looked to start 2025. The Labor Day Classic and the Labor Day rematch, or the Banjo Bowl, whatever you want to call it, are going to be, I think, telltale signs for this Riders team, because as you well know, and lots of people on both sides of that rivalry know, the records don't matter. So if the Riders go through that and sweep it and do it in dominant fashion, they could potentially, depending on what the other teams do, lock up the West Division early, and then we're playing that rest or not rest game that you've heard about so often in Winnipeg over the last 5 years. But I think this Riders team is for real. And the one loss was against the Calgary Stampeders coming off a bye, which was inexplicable in a way, because you thought that the Riders being rested would have at least allowed them to show that they were a physically dominant team. But Calgary manhandled them on the lines of scrimmages, offensively and defensively. Vernon Adams Jr. hit some big plays, but that game to me, 14-point win for Calgary, was much closer than people think. There were two critical 3rd-and-3 calls that Saskatchewan went for. There was another 3rd down they went for a little bit later in the game, so I shouldn't discount that. But two of them I felt like were critical when the game was still within reach potentially for the Riders that they did not get. And then there was a complete bust by Antoine Brooks Jr. on Damian Alford for that deep pass from Vernon Adams Jr. that really killed the momentum that Saskatchewan had coming at halftime. So all that to say, I think that game was closer than a lot of people view it as being. And the Stampeders now have come back to the pack, especially with Vernon Adams Jr. cooling off from his hot start and then being hurt. But I think the Riders are rightfully the favorite at the moment, but they still need to kill Winnipeg. You got to kill the king if you want to be on top.
I think that's a fair assessment, right? The Riders are absolutely the favorite to win the West Final. or at least host the West Final. I don't think you can debate that. Looking at the standings right now, I think it's obvious Edmonton is not catching Saskatchewan. Yeah, anything can happen in the CFL, but I don't think that can happen. BC, even, I think, is going to have a really tough time to catch Saskatchewan. Right now, the Riders are 8 points ahead of BC, and they've got the season series. There's one meeting between these two teams left. It's, I believe, the last game of the season. So theoretically, right, it's not impossible for the Lions to catch the Riders, but I think there's a less than 1% chance. For now, let's just pretend that that's a 0% chance. That leaves Calgary and Winnipeg. Right now, the Riders up 4 points on Calgary, up 6 points on Winnipeg, though the Bombers have played one fewer game, so they've got a game in hand. In terms of the head-to-head matchup so far this season, yeah, the Riders lost the only meeting to Calgary thus far. They've got the rubber match of that two-game season series coming up in week 12. They've got to win that one by more than 14 points if they want to have the season series against the Stampeders. Meanwhile, everything is up for grabs against the Bombers. The Riders have 10 games left. Three are against Winnipeg. They'll, of course, meet for the annual Labor Day home and home. And then again, towards the end of the season, two of those meetings are at Princess Auto Stadium. That's probably not optimal if you're the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. That said, your end goal is to win the Grey Cup at Princess Auto Stadium. So maybe there's something to be said for getting your feet wet in Bomberland and maybe hosting that game in their locker room. I did say on the show last week, Justin, when you weren't here, wouldn't it be wild if the Grey Cup was Saskatchewan and Winnipeg in Winnipeg with Saskatchewan as the home team? That would be so CFL for that to happen. I'm not saying it will, but I'm not saying it won't if you catch my drift. As for the rest of the schedule, the Riders are on a well-earned bye right now. They'll return to host the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Obviously, the Tiger Cats, the hottest team in the CFL right now, six straight wins. They've been remarkable. That's a tough matchup for them. Then they go to Calgary. We'll see if VA is back. Back-to-back against the Bombers. They host the Alouettes. If Davis Alexander comes to town, obviously the Alouettes, way different team. So the next five games are pretty rough for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. The good news for them, the next five, not so much. They're at Edmonton. Obviously, the Elks looked better this past week, but they're still a one-win football team. And then you go at Ottawa against Toronto, both two-win football teams, and then you finish the season with Winnipeg and BC. So the schedule overall, I would say, it's not a murderer's row, but it's probably tougher than it is easier for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, right? They're done playing I guess they're not done playing anybody in the East Division, but the point is they've taken advantage of some lighter opponents earlier on in the season, some banged up teams, but they've also gotten some really, really good, credible wins. Beating Hamilton, for instance, in Hamilton was quite a coup week one, because obviously the Ticats have since found their footing. So I'm interested to see what happens with the Riders. Credit to them for what they've been able to do. They absolutely are the favorite to win it, but there's half a season yet to be played, of course.
As you laid out, man, still 10 games to go in the regular season. We had callers calling in to the 620 CKRM post-game show wondering, are we too confident about this team? Like, is this too early to be on a roll? It's like, no, man, like 2 points, a win counts the same as it does in June and July, just like September and October. So you'd rather be 7-1 than some of the other records that we see in the Canadian Football League right now. And I think this team is warranted as being, at the moment, the odds-on favorite to win the Grey Cup. Part of it, Hodge, is the depth that this team has. You know, Keen Schaefer-Baker didn't play very long in week one. They haven't had him for, you know, the majority of the season. Let's call it all of the season, because he got hurt early in that football game. And they continue to just put receivers in there who produce, right? Sean Bain Jr. hasn't even played a down yet for this team this season. And Trevor Harris is arguably the hottest quarterback in the league at the moment. He missed one start, so his yardage and touchdown total isn't quite up there with Bo Levi Mitchell, but he's playing close to, if not just as good as Bo Levi Mitchell, with a receiving core that has had some injuries and new guys come in like Joe Robustelli, Dante Myers taking his game to another level. Same with Keyshawn Johnson. We've seen some other guys come in and out of the lineup, especially at the offensive line and left tackle position specifically. Peyton Collins, and it was Daniel Johnson, then Darius Washington, then back to Peyton Collins. And the offense really hasn't missed a beat, and that included a game where Jake Mayer started at quarterback and he threw for less than 200 yards, but the physicality of that team was able to run the football with A.J. Ouellette, and defense did enough for them to get a win in that one. And defensively, it's much of the same, right? If a guy gets hurt, they roll him in. I think to me what is standing out about this football team is the way that the front office is meshing with the coaching staff. And that doesn't necessarily always happen the way that you think it would in professional football. Jeremy O'Day, Kyle Carson, the assistant general manager, and the staff there, Larry Dean, should get a shout out too, because he's done some great work, helped find, for example, Dre McCray. I want to make sure I got his first name right. Dre McCray, bring him up here. Those guys are looking for players that fit what Corey Mace is looking for, but also they fit what Mace is looking for in the locker room. You know, to me, it's very similar to what's gone on in Winnipeg over the years with Michael Shea. Michael Shea has a very specific type of player, unless you're like a Willie Jefferson. But even then, Willie Jefferson, you know, it seems by all accounts, is at least a good human being and would fit the type of personality that Michael Shea wants in that locker room. So I think that's part of the reason why the Riders have been so good and are rolling in 2025.
Yeah, Trevor Harris is playing great football. AJ Ouellette, nice bounce back year. The receiving core is exceptional, right? They're a very dangerous unit without Sam Emelis and Kian Schaefer-Baker and Sean Bain Jr., which says a lot, right? The O-line, I love the right side. Ferland, Brammer, Hardrick, great. The left side, when healthy, I like too. I don't love the current lineup there, but I think they'll get there. The D-line is obviously great. The linebacking core is very good. The secondary has been good, though Nelson Lacombo needs to learn how to catch. Really the only knock on that team right now as a whole. Like if I'm their GM or head coach or ever going into the playoffs, I'm worried if the game comes down to a kick. And Brett Lawther was 4 for 5 this past week. Some of those are chip shots, but okay, maybe he's turning the corner. But obviously Brett Lawther is by far and away the 9th place kicker in the CFL right now. He's got to be better. If things come down to, you know, whether it's a regular season game to clinch first place, whether it's the West Final, and obviously whether it's the Grey Cup, that's like the one spot on that list where I'm a little worried for the Saskatchewan Roughriders. But other than that, I would happily, confidently predict them to finish first in the West.
Lawther's shown to be clutch when the kicks matter the most, so we'll see what happens the rest of the season. And, you know, you look at the defense, and there's some talk in Rider Nation, Hodge, I want to get your opinion on this, that Saskatchewan might, and I stress might, have the best interior defensive tackle tandem in the league with Mike Rose and Micah Johnson. What say you?
No. They're good. But when Mustafa Johnson is healthy and you pair him with Sean Oakman and Dylan Wynn, I think that's better. Sask, I would probably say is second best, though I also think that what they're doing in Calgary has been pretty special Miles Brown's maybe not an every down guy just because he's so big, but they've got guys they could rotate. And then Jalen Hutchings might be the best interior defender in the CFL. So Saskatchewan's right up there. Frankly, Edmonton's defensive line as a whole has been very disappointing. That's one I would have looked to preseason. I'm not looking to them right now. But a healthy Montreal, I think, gives Saskatchewan a run for their money. And I think Calgary's right there as well.
Some intriguing names for sure. Let's go out to Winnipeg, Hodge, where American rookie Trey Vavil became the first player, as mentioned, in Blue Bombers history to record a kick return touchdown and a punt return TD in the same game. Is that performance a flash, or can Vavil be a consistently dangerous returner in the CFL?
So Vavil lost two turnovers, like two giveaways in his first six games. And I was high on him coming into the regular season. Like when you talk to people about the newcomers in Bomberland, Vavil was kind of the guy who kept coming up. Cause I do think he's a legit DB prospect. Like he's obviously not played a ton of DB for them. I don't think they want to start a guy and have him be the primary returner. That's a lot to put on somebody, but I do think he's a legit cover guy. Right. And it's a very, and I've had these conversations as well, by the way, with people at the CFL. It's a luxury to have a returner who's a DB because obviously for different packages that you could install, it's great to have a guy who could play defense. Whereas on the offensive side of the ball, a lot of guys who are pure returners and like do a little bit of receiving, the receiving coaches don't want them because they don't consider them to be polished receivers who can do all the things that receivers need to be able to do. So having a DB do the job is nice. Played at Minnesota State. Not the highest level of collegiate football, but the testing numbers are great. Ran a 4.51 at 5.11, a buck 73, 37-inch vert. You like to see that for a defensive back. 6.90, three cone, like the quickness is there. The thing that surprised me most about Vavil this season is his physicality, his ability to run through people. Like, he is a vertical returner. He finds vertical seams quickly and he attacks them. And Nick Dembski, a guy who hasn't returned in a long time, but does have return touchdowns in this league. I talked to him after this last game and he said, honestly, Trey reminds me a lot of Janarian Grant, the way that he is not a thick guy, like 175 pounds soaking wet on a good day, but he seeks out contact and he always seems to find a way to fight for extra yardage. That is not a trait that is common in returners. Returners typically will, you know, look to break contain, and the second they can't, they will find the sideline or they will look to avoid contact one way or the other. That is not Trey Vavil. He did leave a game earlier this year after getting shaken up, so maybe he has to pick his spots a little better. But I spoke to somebody, and this is not a word of a lie. I was down on Trey Vavil after his second lost giveaway in that Toronto game. Granted, it was raining, but still, it was an ugly play that cost the Bombers points. And I spoke to somebody who was like, no, Trey Vavil is awesome, and he's going to break out soon. And I was like, really? And he was like, yeah, there are very few players who can find seams the way that he can, get upfield as quickly as he can, who attack the ball like he can. And I remember going, okay, well, for your sake, I hope you're right. Or for Vavil's sake, I hope you're right. Because Peyton Logan is presumably going to get healthy here at some point. Cody Case was looking like the Bombers wanted to get him on the roster. Obviously, he suffered, unfortunately, a devastating leg injury late in that Toronto game in week number 8. But regardless, I was starting to wonder, like, how many more reps are you giving Vavil? Well, the kickoff return was very nice. It was a good return. That punt return he had was ridiculous. Like, the way that he was able to split, like the Red Sea parted, right, for him with those two initial defenders, and the way that he was able to outflank Toronto's defense. Like, I was watching it live. He was running away from me in the press box, and I remember seeing the angle and going like, oh, good for him for finding that angle, but he's not going to be able to turn the corner. And he put on the afterburners and just broke contain. And he did. He did remind me of Janarian Grant on that one, because there are times where, whether it's in Toronto or with Winnipeg, Janarian Grant has just outrun angles in this league that you didn't think anybody could outrun. So good for Trey Vavil. He's a guy who seems to be, I've talked to him a couple times now, humble. He talks about still learning to be a professional and going about his business the right way. So his teammates seem to like him. And obviously, I think with two touchdowns in the same game, arguably winning his team that game, I think you have to give him the benefit of the doubt and say, okay, we're not going to talk about those two fumbles anymore. You've made up for them. We got a clean slate. And I'm excited to see what he does next. He seems like a very exciting young player.
Let's not get it twisted. He did win the Bombers that game. Chris Trevler threw three interceptions and the Bombers still won.
I do want to note, like one of the interceptions was fluky. Anthony Lanier gets his big old mitt up there, bats it down, and it just like happens to land in the awaiting arms of Cameron Judge. Yes, it's an interception. I don't put it all. Actually, I don't really put any of that on Chris Trevler. The second one probably didn't make the best decision with the ball, but again, another tip drill kind of fluky thing. The third pick that Chris Trevler threw, which happened right in front of the press box, by the way, was unbelievably bad. It was a terrible play call by Jason Hogan. It was poor execution from Chris Streveler. You're up 6 points in field goal range, and you're testing a 6'2" defensive back on a jump ball in the end zone? What are we doing? Like, what? Like, that game was insanity. Which, by the way, those games are a lot of fun to cover. They're also exhausting because typically in the media, we like to know with 5 or 10 minutes left in the game, who's going to win. And the Bombers had the opportunity to put that game away and they didn't. And they had another chance and then they didn't. And they had another chance and they didn't. And they had another chance. And it was, oh my God. Anyway, Trey Vavil though, legit. He's going to be our breakout player of the week and our special teams player of the week here at Three Down Nation.
Let's see if you can keep it up, though, because now you're going to see an increased focus from special teams coordinators around the league, breaking down his film, kicking away from him, making him take different angles, you know, not allowing him to do the kinds of things that he's shown in this breakout. Like you said, outrun angles. I think teams will take better angles, but specifically, they're going to make it harder on him to catch these footballs in the air in terms of where they're kicking it. So I'm curious to see if he can be consistently dangerous. It seems like he has that ability, but it is difficult, and that's what separates the true great ones, to go from being a flash with an epic game, one for the books, the first bomber ever to have it, as we said, a kick and a punt return TD in the same game, but then to do it consistently like we've seen from Janarian Grant or some other great returners, Mario Alford still in this league, although he's injured at the moment. It's another level. So I'm curious to see if Vavil can take that step, because it's clear to me, you mentioned his 40 time there, 4.51, I think you said. He's got elite game speed. Like, he turns on the juice at game time, which is what you want to see from guys. Can they translate that 40 time over into the game? Well, he does that over and above his 40 time, especially with the way he was outrunning angles.
And I'm sure our listeners would have some good names for us, but I was thinking about really good CFL returners who are DBs, because the list is not very long. Like, most of them are receivers, running back. The first guy I thought of was Tristan Jackson, who was very good for many years at Edmonton, some in Sasky. But maybe that's a future three-down article. Great CFL returners who are also defensive backs. After all, come March, we're going to need content, Justin. We're going to need content. In an exclusive interview, Sean Lemon took full responsibility for his gambling suspension and explained why he tested positive for a banned substance. Do you believe the soon-to-be 37-year-old has learned his lessons?
I think Sean Lemon has learned his lessons. And if you want to read the article, it's up at 3downnation.com. We also have the video in our player. And you can see the way that he's talking. He understands the gravity, especially of the gambling suspension. And even though it was little, I think he realizes that, you know, perhaps in a way he's lucky to be playing football again. He told me directly that he wasn't expecting to be able to even be signed again to play football. So he seems contrite in that respect. And I think he wants to share knowledge within the CFLPA and to younger players about knowing all the details. That goes with gambling, but then obviously for the banned substance, I forget the exact name of the substance, but that he said was prescribed to him by a doctor, and he didn't go and check it. He just thought, okay, well, the doctor's prescribing me this and it should be okay to take. And that ultimately netted him a 2-game ban. So he had to wait out an extra 2 games to get back on the field. It was over 400 days between games for Sean Lemon. Now, I'm not saying we should feel sorry for him. There are people on the other side that believe that Sean Lemon should not ever play in the Canadian Football League again. I asked Lemon directly about people with those kinds of opinions, and he says he can't control them. He hopes to just earn their respect and trust back. And when he was talking about not wanting to let the league and Commissioner Stuart Johnston down, I really got the sense that he meant it. It wasn't one of those like, oh, well, you need to say this because this is what media relations people say you should say. Or you need to apologize to your brother because your mom told you that hitting him is not a good thing and you have to apologize, you're going to get in more trouble. Like, it seemed like a real apology from Sean Lemon to Canadian Football League, the league office, the commissioner, and its fans. And the other part of this, Hodge, is he knows if he does this again, if he bets on another game and he gets caught, he's banned from the CFL forever. Like, his career is done. Some people might say, oh, well, he's at the end of it anyways. But he knows his career is done. Plus, there are other stipulations that he has to abide by to continue to keep playing CFL football because of the gambling suspension. So I think he has learned his lessons, and it was probably, you know, overall, at least from my perspective, a net positive for the league to see a guy who is a known name, 12th on the CFL sack list, back on the field. Like, we can't have too many of those guys who have become household names across Canada on the field. I think the punishment fit the crime here. I'm not forgiving him for any of that. I think he learned some hard lessons. I thought the CFL, and we bang on them a lot, Hodge, got it right with this gambling suspension. The fact that it was, you know, around 70 euros, $100 Canadian. He was betting on his own team, the Calgary Stampeders. It wasn't, you know, hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of dollars like Jonte Porter, who was in the NBA and got banned for a lifetime. So I think the punishment fit the crime, and it sounds like Sean Lemon has learned some hard lessons.
Yeah, I already said this. I'll say it again quickly. I think that a good standard for gambling in fractions in the CFL is if you bet on general games or you bet on your own team to win, that's a year-long suspension. And if you are caught match fixing or betting against yourself or your team in any way, it's a lifetime ban. And after a first-time ban, right, or a one-year ban, any second infraction is a lifetime ban, even if you bet on just general games or on your own team or whatever. So I think this is a good precedent. I was critical of Sean Lemon when this news first broke because I said if he didn't do this, he should be releasing a statement emphatically denying that he had anything to do with this. And if he did do it, he should be offering a formal apology. And I don't believe he ever denied doing this. I don't know why he didn't offer a formal apology. If the league's case was ironclad that he did in fact do this, which evidently now with this admission, he is acknowledging that yes, he did do this. I don't know why he didn't do this a year ago. I wish that he had, but I do think that now, without needing to necessarily apologize potentially, he should be commended for acknowledging the error of his ways. None of us are perfect. And when you make a mistake, I think it's good to correct that. Speaking of, last week I said on the show that media members are not able to talk to position coaches, which I thought was true. I was enlightened this week. That is not true at all. I thought that teams made coordinators available once a week only. Apparently on that day, you can request anybody you want. Now, a team might still say no. They have that right or that option, apparently. But if you want to talk to the backup long snappers coach, apparently you can. So my fault as a member of the media for not knowing that, because maybe there's a great story to be told from the backup long snappers coach. But regardless, I'm fine with the way that this has proceeded. Again, I wish Lemon had said this earlier, because I think the earlier you say it, the more authenticity there is to it. That being said, I think it's still good that he said this regardless. And I'm happy to just focus on football, I think, from here on out, because I do think that Sean Lemon deserves to be playing this late in his career. He's still a good player. Obviously, the Alouettes got kicked in his first game back, but I still think that we will see him make good plays this year. I do. Now time for JC's random naglister, and I'll be taking this one this week with JC away. JC should be back next week. I have picked quarterback Ian Book out of Notre Dame. He is on Winnipeg's naglist. The 27-year-old native of El Dorado Hills, California, was a fourth-round pick in the 2021 NFL draft by the New Orleans Saints. He saw action in only one game as a rookie and completed 12 of 20 pass attempts for 135 yards and two interceptions in a late-season loss to the Miami Dolphins. Book was released by the Saints after training camp in 2022 and has since had stints with the Philadelphia Eagles, New England Patriots, and Kansas City Chiefs, though he's never seen more regular season action. The 6-foot, 211-pound passer has some dual-threat capabilities, running a 4.65 40-yard dash and rushing for over 1,500 yards over four collegiate seasons with the Fighting Irish. Now, Book is currently a free agent, which is why I thought he was an intriguing player to highlight. According to SpotRack, he earned $2.3 million in the NFL, which obviously is a lot of money. Might mean he's still willing to come up to the CFL, make some CFL money. Full disclosure, I've reached out to Book's agent multiple times to ask if he'd consider coming to the CFL, and he has ghosted me. So take that for what it's worth. Maybe that means they're working on a deal right now. Maybe that he means, I'm tired of this loser reporter texting me. Get off my back. I don't know.
Let's see if he comes up, man. I think he would be an intriguing quarterback up here. And I mean, after taxes, I don't know exactly how it works in the NFL and the States there. What are you net? $1 million USD? Like, you're still going to need some more cash. And if you become a starting quarterback in the Canadian Football League, which there could be upside for Book to do, you can make some pretty good money.
Well, and obviously given the age of Zach Collaros and a few other factors, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers might need to be bringing in the next one. I mean, every team's trying to bring in the next one all the time, but Ian Book, maybe he'll be the guy. And imagine how clever Winnipeg's social media team is. If they had a quarterback whose last name was Book, I can only think of the puns and the gifts and the things that they would be putting out there. So that'd be good. It's now time for Hodges Heritage Moment. On this day in 2018, Johnny Manziel made his first career CFL start, which was a disaster, ending in a 50-11 loss to the Hamilton Tiger Cats. The former first-round NFL draft pick completed 11 of 20 pass attempts for 104 yards and four interceptions, making the performance one of the worst debuts for any quarterback in league history. Manziel fared better after his debut, finishing the season with 1,290 yards, 5 touchdowns and 7 picks, but was of course barred from the league during the offseason. Justin, what do you remember of this fateful day when Johnny Manziel started his first career CFL game as a member of the Montreal Alouettes?
There was so much anticipation, and he was so awful. So, PJ Walker, if you're listening to this, at least you weren't quite as bad as Johnny Football or Johnny Manziel. And it just never lived up to the hype. Like, the celebrity, the fame, the notoriety that he brought to the Canadian Football League, I think arguably helped. But he just never played well on the field. Like, he seemed like he had the traits to fit up here, just never was able to put it together. I would personally like to see a 30 for 30 on the untold story of Johnny Manziel in the CFL, because I've heard some nuggets about what went on behind the scenes, and I'd like to hear more. Let's put it that way.
We'll have to get some bartenders from the surrounding area around Notre Dame in Montreal on the record for that one. And I'm not telling tales out of school. Johnny Manziel has said in podcast interviews exactly where he spent most of his time in Montreal, and it was in bars around the Notre Dame in Montreal. So I'm sure, yes, there are interesting stories there. It's now time for the 3-minute drill.
Former Toronto Argonauts receiver Mekhi Polk has been waived by the Atlanta Falcons. Could he be back in the CFL in 2025?
Yes, I think he will be, and he'll be right back, of course, with the team that owns his exclusive rights, the Toronto Argonauts. The Baltimore Ravens have brought back veteran Canadian defensive lineman Brent Urban. He is still going strong, entering year 11 of his NFL career. How has he managed that?
The length that this dude has is rare to find. Also, his motor. He's a Mississauga native, I believe. The guy is still getting it done, cashing NFL checks. So hopefully he can make the roster coming out of training camp with the Baltimore Ravens. Edmonton linebacker Nick Anderson has been placed on the 6-game injured list due to a groin injury. How much does that hurt the Double E defense?
It hurts because Anderson's a great player. That said, I've been very excited to see Joel DeBlanco, former first overall CFL draft pick, get a shot. I thought he was excellent in the preseason. Yeah, he's a little more of a Mike than he is a Will, but still, I think he can be a good player for them. Saskatchewan Roughriders defensive back Devon Campbell was fined for a high hit on Edmonton QB Cody Fajardo. Was that warranted?
You know, I don't think so, man. Fajardo, all due respect, I know we're trying to protect quarterbacks, at the time was a runner. And Campbell was actually trying to get out of the way of any further contact with Fajardo as he was trying to hit the deck. So I understand that it was a high hit in terms of if Fajardo was a passer, but he wasn't in the pocket. He was running at this point. Like, he was a runner. So, you know, to your point, Hodge, you made on social media, it's another example where we need to get these rules dialed in here, because I'm starting to feel, and yes, I'm saying it as a former Canadian University football quarterback, I'm feeling for the defenders, because the strike zone on quarterbacks in the pocket is already so small, and now it's like they turn into a runner. How are you supposed to get the guy to the ground and not make you look silly and end up as the butt of jokes on SportsCenter? Like, we got to get this figured out. Bo Levi Mitchell told TSN post-game that Cody Fajardo is, quote, probably the most disrespected quarterback, close quote, in the CFL. Do you think that's accurate?
Well, given how he played this past week, yeah. I mean, Hamilton's defense has been very good for the last little while, and Cody Fajardo was slinging it. Like, does he have the biggest arm in the CFL? No, but he's mobile enough that he can move the launch point. He can buy time for himself behind that offensive line that has struggled at times this season. And I thought he made some really good decisions with the football. So, yeah, especially for a guy who's been a Grey Cup MVP. Maybe we do disrespect Cody Fajardo. The Buffalo Bills waive Canadian defensive lineman Hayden Harris with an injury designation to his hamstring. What's his status?
From what I've been told, the Bills are still interested in him, and if he can rehab back to 100%, there's a chance he could be with the Bills for the 2025 NFL season. Long way to go, training camp, you never know who's going to jump out, but the Bills still do have interest in Harris. Calgary signed Canadian defensive back Delonnie Robinson. Does he have upside with the Stamps?
Absolutely. I still can't believe this guy didn't get drafted. 6'2", granted, a bit of a beanpole, like only 190 pounds, but ran a 4.52 at the combine. He's got hops. He's got quickness. Like, that combination of size and speed doesn't come along very often. Even in the NFL, like, how many prospects out here playing corner are a true 6'2", running a true electronically timed 4.5? The answer is not very many. So I'm glad to see Delonnie Robinson, University of Regina product, on a CFL roster. Last one, Canadian quarterback Taylor Elgersmuth threw a touchdown pass to end the Packers' family night on Saturday. Then he took part in a Lambeau leap with his quarterback counterparts, including Jordan Love. Can Elgersmuth break training camp and stick with Green Bay?
I think so, man. You know, apparently that touchdown pass was a nice one. There's no clips of it online yet. That's just based on what the Packers fans were saying, and I don't think they mess around out there. And you look at the progression that Elgersma has shown and the way that Matt LaFleur has talked about him, I think there's a real chance that he sticks around Green Bay and is there to be developed as the Packers figure out how to mold this talented ball of clay who happens to be a Canadian, played his collegiate football at Wilfrid Laurier University, and seems to have a lot of upside in the NFL.
Bro, we're talking about family night. We're talking about I'm not trying to be a hater. I'm rooting for Taylor Elgersma. But we're talking about family night.
Hey, man, when you got like over 50,000 people at Lambeau Field, the lights come on, and you're slinging touchdown passes, that bodes well for you to potentially make the roster or the practice squad. I'm just saying.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. For Justin Dunk, I'm John Hodge. We thank you as always for listening to the Three Down Nation podcast. We will potentially be moving forward with Sunday recordings through the rest of the season, given, of course, that CFL weeks are running Thursday through Saturday for almost the entire rest of the regular season. JC and I will be back for our picks on Wednesday. We'll see you then.